90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Good morning. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today, our guest is Dr. Timothy Post with Cornerstones of Care, a local organization that helps build safe and healthy communities. Good morning, Dr. Post. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Good morning, Joseph. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background and how you got into what you're doing?
Okay. Well, I'm a clinical psychologist, and I currently work at Cornerstones of Care teaching relationship classes. I've been doing this for about a year and a half. Prior to that, I worked mostly in doing individual psychotherapy and psychological testing in a wide range of settings, mostly in Kansas City.
What is the mission of Cornerstones of Care?
I'm sorry, Joseph.
What is the mission of Cornerstones of Care?
The mission, I would say, is to promote healthy families. The original focus was more on children, but I think it's expanded to promote healthy family relationships.
I know you partner with many other organizations to help you build these safe and healthy communities, such as University of Missouri, with the classes that you offer. How do these partnerships help with the program that you offer?
Okay. Well, our particular program, as you mentioned, is through the University of Missouri. They provide our funding. We're operating under a grant that they have. And we teach classes to the community for couples and singles to help them build healthy relationships. And we have some other classes that aren't directly relationship-oriented but kind of contribute to that overall goal of creating healthy relationships and families.
I know today is Valentine's Day, and everybody wants to have a sweetheart. And we're here to discuss one of the classes that you really teach that really help people find and pick that partner, because I've been through the class with people, understand that everybody has red marbles and green marbles, and then we'll elaborate on what those red and green marbles are, but how they can help you pick a partner that you will be not only happy with but also compatible with.
Yes. Well, the class you're referring to is called the PICK class, and it was created by a gentleman by the name of Dr. John Van Epp. And one of his models is the use of what he calls green and red marbles. Green marbles representing things that you desire in a partner, things that you look for. And then red marbles are just the opposite, things that you want to avoid, things that might make you decide not to pursue or remain in the relationship. And obviously, you know, there's both of those are going to be present in any relationship, any potential partner. But obviously, we want more green marbles than red marbles.
But also, red marbles can be an indicator to kind of help you see that this may not be a person who is a good fit for you, because we're all going to bring red marbles to a relationship.
Right.
But it's deciding which of that person is red marbles that you can and cannot deal with.
Right, right. That's a good point. And, you know, like you said, everybody has red marbles. And what might be a red marble in a potential partner for me may not be for you. It may even be a green marble. So the key there, I think, is in knowing yourself very well and the things that you, you know, that are important to you, the things that you're looking for in a partner, and to be very mindful of those as you enter into a relationship.
dating has changed so much. We went from you would meet person maybe at church. Mm-hmm. Now it's a lot of online dating. Mm-hmm. How does the Pick a Partner class help someone who is single or newly single find a healthy, stable relationship?
Yeah, I think it has changed a lot. And I think because communities aren't as, well, communities are larger in general. They're not as tightly knit. People don't stay in the communities they originated from. So I think it makes it harder in some ways to find a partner. And you mentioned online sources. You know, the difficulty with that is that it doesn't really afford you the opportunity of getting to know someone very thoroughly. So it makes it a little bit more challenging to identify those traits that you might be interested in and the things that you want to avoid.
I know, is the classes that are offered by Cornerstones of Care, the Pick a Partner, the Strong Family, Strong Children, are those just for people in the Kansas City area? Do you all teach those classes in KCK and other areas around Kansas City?
Well, since we're through the University of Missouri, we're somewhat limited to the Missouri side of the Kansas City area. We do teach in Jackson County, Cass County, Clay and Platte counties. In the past, we have taught classes in Johnson and Wyandotte counties in Kansas, and we may do so again in the future, but our emphasis is on Missouri.
So if a person lives in Kansas, are they eligible to take those classes?
Yes. You can live in Kansas, but the class itself would be held on the Missouri side. So.
And you all have multiple campuses. I've been to, you've had the Hyde Park campus, mm-hmm. the campus right there off of 95th and Bannister Road, mm-hmm. and then you've even worked in a couple of churches up in the Northland and Platte County. Mm-hmm. So you have classes wide around Kansas City to help suit any potential person's needs.
Right. Yes, all over the city. And also, I forgot to mention, we have classes in the Warrensburg area as well. So.
Good.
Hi, this is Marvita Oliver.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I know that there are some people who may be calling in to make reservations to get into these classes. Mm-hmm. Is this something that's they're waiting to get a number of people, or are they ready to have the classes right now?
Well, we've got classes ongoing all the time. Mm-hmm. We've got classes that we're in the middle of or that have recently started right now. And then we have classes upcoming next month and in April, and we're accepting applications for those.
Okay. Yeah. So as long as they're posted on that that information sheet, they should be able to get into the class?
They should. I mean, some of the earlier classes may already be filled. I'm not sure. But, mm-hmm. but yes, if they just call that number or get on the website and look, then they can talk to someone who can tell them which ones are available.
Okay.
I know that the Pick a Partner class is how many hours of instruction do people sit down for in that class?
It's 5 hours after the initial intake is done. There's an intake process that sometimes is done individually, sometimes it's done in a group setting, but the class itself is five sessions
mm-hmm. once a week. And correct me if I'm wrong, it's 2 hours.
Two hours,
three sessions, so it's a total of 10 hours.
Right. And they're almost always in the evenings.
It's usually from about 6 to 8. Mm-hmm. And I know that for some people who are single, child care may be an issue, having to find someone.
Right.
Is that something that you all help with? I know when the classes I took, that all the classes they did offer child care for those that needed child care.
Yes, we provide child care. There's a couple of places that where we've taught classes that have their own child care that they've offered to us. But if that's not there, then we do offer child care.
And it's at no cost, so people don't have to worry about paying child care while they're attending a class.
Right, that's correct.
Yeah, and that's really important if you're a couple and you're having some issues.
Yes.
You need that time to know that, okay, this is all right. Let me just focus on us right now.
Right.
I had a question about the the classes. When these couples are coming to your classes, is there any follow-up or any data tracking the what actually happens in those relationships? Because relationships are a kind of gray area.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good question. It's one that comes up quite a bit. Unfortunately, there isn't a lot of formal follow-up anyway. I wish that there were. I think that would be interesting to continue, with those people and kind of see how they're doing. Informally, there's some follow-up. For example, some of the people that take either the couples class or the singles class go on to take one of our supplemental classes. So sometimes we have continued contact with them in those other classes, and informally we might have conversations about how they're doing and so on. But nothing as far as any kind of formal data collection process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the How to Pick a Partner class is one of your core classes. Mm-hmm. Can you explain for our listeners what it is when you say a core class?
Yes. We have two classes that are core classes, the singles class that we've been largely talking about, the PIC class, and then we have another class for couples, the Gottman 7 Principles of Healthy Relationships class. So either one of those serves as a core class. So if anybody takes either one of those, then they can go on to take the supplemental classes.
And so you not only offer classes just for singles and how to pick a partner, but for those that may be married for one day or for 50 years, also how to help them increase their communication and their relationships also.
Yes, yes. And sometimes people take both. I mean, I'm doing a couples class right now, and one of the couples that are attending were in the singles class a while back, so they got together after the singles class, and now they're in the couples class. And unfortunately, I suppose it could be in reverse too. If someone leaves a relationship, they could go into the singles class.
In order to help us figure out what we want in a partner, how important is it first for us to understand ourselves?
That, in my opinion anyway, is the most important. I think, if I were to narrow it down to the most basic elemental thing, that would be it. I think really thoroughly, deeply understanding yourself is the most important first step. Everything else kind of follows after that, in my opinion.
I think is an important piece. I'll admit I'm a single, and I know that I've spent a little bit more time trying to get to know me, to mm-hmm. know what I like, mm-hmm. So that it won't be a surprise for mm-hmm. somebody. Mm-hmm. But that's a lot of work.
It is. It's a lot of work and a lot of time. And I what I find, just from my personal experience anyway, is that some of that just comes with age. And I think, unfortunately, people that are younger, like in their, maybe late teens, early 20s, who are most of the people that are looking for relationships, they're just not at a point in life yet that they know themselves that well. I mean, they're still growing up, in a sense. Mm-hmm. So I think it's especially challenging for them to get to know themselves.
How long, what do you mean when you say we trust? Because that's even something that's involved in doing that self-work. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it's an important piece to even feel comfortable with just loving yourself.
Yes.
And trusting yourself.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, I think, one has to get to a point where one trusts one's own judgments and kind of be able to listen to that inner voice, if you will, so that when they meet someone and maybe they start a relationship, if something, if they notice something that might be a bit of a red flag to them, then they can trust themselves enough that this isn't the best relationship, and then they want to change it or end it or something.
I know prior to entering or starting a relationship, what is one of the first things the person really needs to recognize about themselves? Because I know, as you said, it takes time for us to know ourselves, mm-hmm. but what is the really one thing that you really need to understand about yourself before you try to bring the next person into your life or start that new relationship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure if I can narrow it down to one thing. I think just knowing, your kind of your core values, your core beliefs, the things that are important to you in life, what you want out of life. I mean, I think those things are probably what's most important.
And having taken the class, I definitely agree, because if you don't know what you're looking for or what your values or beliefs are, then you introduce somebody else into your life and they've got a different set of values and beliefs.
Right.
Now you've got a hodgepodge that you're trying to figure out. How do you make this work? Well. Because they may come to the table with something that you think is, that's not really compatible with my life.
Right.
And I don't want to be involved in that. But that's why it's important first to know yourself, as you said, your core values, your beliefs, things that you hold dear and that would be a red marble, something you shouldn't say, this is a no-go for me at this point.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, and unfortunately sometimes even if we know ourselves pretty well, we're not always aware of those qualities in the other person because we're blinded by one thing or another. So, I think the starting point is to really know oneself and what's important to you, and then if you find someone who doesn't quite mesh with that, then that may be something that needs to be addressed.
I know in the class in week one, one of the first principles you discuss is we talk about the red and green marbles. Exactly, let's define what are the red marbles and what are green marbles and why are they important for anyone looking to start a relationship?
Sure. Well, again, red marbles are anything that either you or your potential partner possess, any traits or qualities that you possess that may be... warning signs, if you will. They're things that are undesirable, things that you want to avoid. Excuse me. Whereas green marbles are things that you desire, things that you're looking for in the other person, positive qualities that you bring to the table that maybe somebody else might be looking for. So it's a matter of, number one, knowing what those are, both in yourself and in the other person. And then, finding someone whose qualities, negative and positive qualities kind of mesh with your own, or at least mesh with what you're looking for.
When we're examining a potential partner, how do we know if this person is a good pick or a bad pick, based on, because there's a lot to get to know an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't. That's the one thing now, is you don't really get to know a person as well as you used to, 10, 15, 20 years ago, when you had to pick up a phone, call the person, talk to the person.
Right.
Today, you can hide behind, you can text that person, you can be on social media, you can post on their Facebook, but that doesn't really give you that sit-down communication back and forth with that person that you really need to have in order to really begin to know that person.
Right, right. Yes, I mean, I don't want to say that it's impossible to get to know someone, from a distance, but I think at some point it's really important to spend time with that person. And according to Dr. Van Epp, the person that designed this program, actually, he says that roughly about a year of knowing that person and dating that person, spending time with them, is what's ideal for giving you enough time to get to know them to make a decision.
I know a lot of us don't think about it, but how do our families, our relationships that we see between our mother and our father, other people within our families, how do those define and shape our relationships?
Well, first of all, I think our parents' relationships serve as a model for any relationships that we might create in the future. I mean, that we learn what we see. We see how our parents interact with one another, how they treat one another, and that serves as kind of a template for how we approach relationships when we become adults. And then also, if our relationship with our parents growing up things may be present or absent that, you know, we try to balance or remedy in our adult relationships. So again, that's another thing that's important to be knowledgeable of, is how your parents affected you and what kind of relationship they had.
So if you see that power, if you have a strong mom and who takes care of a whole lot, and how would that impact, say, a young man or a young woman who is, you know, looking for a partner? Do people look at, in some cases, they want the same type of partner that their parents had?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it something where, you know, that may not impact that much?
Mm-hmm. Again, I think that's a highly individual thing. And I think the person, it's just a matter of a person kind of doing some self-examination and looking at that. And, you know, figuring out how that has affected them. You know, some people might go on as adults to look for a partner just like, you know, their parent. Or conversely, they might look for somebody who's just the exact opposite of their parent because they don't want that. They want to avoid that. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, knowing that information and taking that into account when you look for relationships.
So it goes back to, again, knowing yourself, knowing what you will accept, knowing what you won't accept.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Unfortunately, all of us come to relationships with baggage. And that is, how important is it for a person to find out about, for you each to disclose the baggage to each other so that people kind of know, and that you don't, oops, walk onto that hidden landmine that unfortunately is still there from one or two relationships past?
Right, yeah, I think that's a good question. And you're right, all of us do have that quote-unquote baggage. I mean, that's unavoidable. No, nobody doesn't have anything that they, you know, bring into relationships. Again, I think, you know, not to sound like a broken record, but I think the important thing to begin with is to just know what that is. And if it is something that can be addressed, to address it. But, you know, knowing what it is, you know, you're better equipped to be wary of it and if you know, you know, where that baggage, you know, might hang you up or what pitfalls it might get you into, you can kind of forestall that from happening, I think. Not sure if that answered your question entirely.
No, it did. So how do you begin to have that conversation with, as you're building that relationship with that person, getting to know that person, how do you begin to have that conversation of, you know, my baggage, your baggage, and how do we begin to work together through that baggage?
And how soon do you have that conversation?
Yes, I think one should do that carefully and not too soon, not too early. I mean, there's no hard and fast rule as to, you know, when you should do that or what the ideal time to do that is. But it would be a mistake, I think, to do that, you know, right up front, for example, or too early in the relationship. And it would also be a mistake not to disclose it at all and to keep it inside and not talk about it. So somewhere in between those two time points, the person, you know, just kind of has to feel it out and, you know, kind of use some of their gut instincts to decide when that's appropriate or not.
So it's just, like you said, it's just a matter of, it's one of those matters of time that you just, as you're beginning to know that person, slowly add in a piece or two.
Yes.
It's kind of like the old adage, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? So don't try to give them the entire elephant at one time.
Right.
Just give them a little bit at a time and let them digest it, because you could end up taking somebody who may be a good fit and a good match for you, but because you're essentially oversharing too soon, it could end up being not a good match, because people begin to think, well, if they're sharing all this with me now, how much is there still left for me to figure out?
Right. That's a good point. And I think you're right. I think, you know, the way to go about it is to, you know, start out by revealing small things and kind of see how the other person handles that. You know, if they're accepting and they seem to understand, that tells you that, you know, this is someone that I probably am safe in disclosing a little bit more to. Again, not too early if it's, you know, if it's anything very, you know, heavy or serious anyway. You know, it comes down to that matter of trust again. That's how you build trust, is you reveal a little bit of that stuff, see how the person responds, how they handle it, and then go from there. It's just kind of a trial and error process, so to speak.
Emotions, how large of a part do emotions play in building relationship with somebody, but also getting to know that person?
No, they play a huge part. I mean, I think that's what relationships are all about, for the most part, is emotions. I mean, I think why we enter into relationships, why we stay in relationships, why we leave relationships, for that matter, is emotion. So I think it's, very critical to be mindful of that. And part of that, I think, is knowing how you yourself handle emotions, how you experience emotions, and how the other person deals with emotions. And someone who isn't able to process emotions or I don't want to say control, but at least modulate their emotions, that might be someone who's not really ready for a relationship at that particular time.
And that's a good point. So what are signs or indicators that somebody may not be able to process their emotions?
I think whenever you see any extremes, like if someone gets angry, perhaps even legitimately, they don't just get angry, they go into a rage and they just explode and, yell and scream and throw things and break things and so on. Someone doesn't just get sad, but they fall into a deep depression, can't get out of bed for days, that kind of thing. And again, it comes back to that matter of time. The longer you've known someone and the more different scenarios that you've seen them in, the more that gives you an opportunity to see those reactions if they're there.
And that can be as you said, it comes down to time, being able to talk with that person. And in today's dating format, that is one of the things that people get a chance to do the least, because there's so many different other ways in which to communicate.
Yes.
But then by the time you actually sit down with that person, you may have been a great texter, you may have been great shooting back, little short messages, mm-hmm. but when you sit down, you don't have that ability to have that in-depth conversation and really discuss things with that person, which then goes back to, okay, this is not a good signal, because that person can text me real well, but when we sit down, we don't engage and interact real well.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a good point. And again, I think ultimately you have to spend physical time with the person. I mean, a relationship might start out online or via distance, but ultimately you have to be together for some length of time.
Yes, and those types of red flags, you had mentioned that it's good not to give too much information in the beginning. But what about those people that don't give any information over a period of time? And then there's this term of the narcissist, mm-hmm. So these are the kind of red flags. How are we able to identify these types of things and handle them?
Well, you're right. I mean, someone who doesn't reveal anything about him or herself, even after a good length of time, I mean, that in and of itself is a red flag. I mean, that, that tells you that, the person's guarding against something for some reason. And then again, that person just may not be, suitable for a relationship for anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you're listening to Cowtown Conversations, and our guest today is Dr. Tim Post with Cornerstones of Care, and we were talking about their relationship class, how to pick a partner, and it's Valentine's Day, so I know a lot of people want to have a partner, but we're talking today about ensuring to pick the best partner for you. And even though you have a singles class, you also have a class for married, for those that are married, to help them reconnect and connect also.
And not just married, but just As a couple and in general, yes.
Uh-huh. We're going to take a short break and we're going to come back and finish the conversation, but also talk about some of the other classes that you have. So you're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI. This is Cowtown Conversations on Kansas City's only community radio station. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we're back. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And today our guest is Dr. Timothy Post, who is a clinical psychologist and working with Cornerstones of Care. And we're talking about the How to Pick a Partner class. One of the things that the relationship attachment model that you talk about in the class, as we've been briefly going over certain areas, know, trust, rely, commit, mm-hmm. and touch.
Mm-hmm.
How can we not overstate how important it is to get to know a person that you're trying to begin a relationship with or build a relationship with?
I don't think you can overstate it. I mean, I think that is just so critical. I mean, you have to really know yourself thoroughly before you can get into any of those other modes that you mentioned, the trusting and relying on the person, et cetera. You know, if you don't have that fundamental knowledge both of yourself and of the potential partner, then you're going to be somewhat hobbled going through those later phases.
How long can it take to really get to know a person? I mean, it's not something that speed racer that you can be do it over 24 hours, over mm-hmm. 40 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, when I got divorced and I went to divorce care at my church, and they said, you know, the first year that you're with anybody, you meeting that person's agent, who they represent themselves to be their agent. Mm-hmm. It's in that second year when you really get to know who that person's representative is, who they actually are, because anybody can keep up a false facade for up to a year. And people really need to understand that, you know, it takes time to get to know a person on both sides.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting way of putting it, actually. I like that. Well, again, Dr. Van Epp says that it takes a good year of being with somebody to get to know them very well. But I think it's also an individual thing. You know, some people may take a little longer than that. I mean, it's possible, I suppose, that for some people, you know, it may take not quite that long. But on the average, for most people, it's going to take around a year, you know, give or take a little bit. And, of course, more, you're always going to be learning about that person, you know, even if it's a good relationship and you know each other pretty well and you start this relationship and you end up staying together, getting married, whatever. You're always going to be learning about the other person, and you're probably going to be discovering new things about that person as time goes on. And also, people change. You know, the person you met and got together with may be a somewhat different person 10 years,
five,
down
10 years
the line,
down the road.
You know.
One of the things, as you bring that up from the class, when you meet somebody and people want to change,
mm-hmm.
but the responsibility for that person changing is on that person. There's nothing that the person that's entering that relationship can do to make that individual want to change their behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it for people to really recognize that?
Well, I think it's very important, and you're right. The you know, it's not in the partner's purview, and they don't have the power to change that other person. You know, only the individual can do that themselves, and it may need to be with assistance. They may need to get into counseling or therapy or something. But ultimately, it falls on that individual to be able to make those changes.
And so what are like as you're making those changes and you're starting to get to know each other, what are some of the signs that, okay, this is working? I mean, you know what I'm saying? Okay, we've talked about, okay, don't share too much, don't share too little.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then when do you know, when in your mind and you're seeing yourself with this other person, what is it that's letting you know, okay, this might be something yeah. to continue?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I don't know if anybody's ever asked that. They usually ask, you know, what are the signs that it's not working? But I think, you know, if you're happy, you know, if you feel like you're a better person as a result of being with this person. Other things in your life are going well in part because you're with this person. And the two of you together seem to have a lot of fun, and you contribute to each other's lives. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, I think those are some key things to look for. And ultimately, it just comes kind of down to your, you were asking about emotions earlier, just comes down to your feelings. Do you feel good with this person?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because emotions are like your energy in motion.
Yes.
So that, when you're attracted, I guess, that's a good thing. If you've seen that you're repelling each other, that's
right.
A sign too, I guess.
Well, and our emotions are like signals to ourselves, just like physical pain. If you have physical pain, that tells you that there's something wrong somewhere. Your emotional state tells you, whether things are right or wrong in a relationship or in any other situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When we talk about trust, what do we really mean when we say the word trust?
Well, Dr. Van Epp, again, who the creator of the program, his definition of trust is the ability to predict the other person, what they're going to do, what they're going to say, how they're going to act, given a certain situation. And I think that's a pretty good definition. I mean, and you can see right away why that comes from knowledge. I mean, you can't predict how a person's going to respond if you don't know them first. So trust very naturally and almost immediately follows from knowing the person.
So the trust is essentially the second building block that
yes.
comes from getting to know that person. So then we go from trust to rely.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about the word rely, what do we mean by that?
Mm-hmm. Well, in essence, reliance is putting that trust that you have in a person into action. Trust is the knowledge you have about a person, the ability to predict that person. Reliance is putting that into effect. So if you for example, your car breaks down out on the highway and you call your partner, first of all, you're not going to call your partner if you don't trust them. But if you do and you call them, then you have in your mind some degree of knowledge that you can rely on them to come and help you, come pick you up or what have you.
You relying on them to get you out of that situation. I know it's kind of about 4 years ago, my daughter called me at 2:00 in the morning. She had gotten her car into a ditch, and it was that she knew that if she called Dad, then Dad would show up
right.
to be able to help get her out of that ditch. And, even though it took us about 2 hours to get her out the ditch,
uh-huh.
but she knew that reliance was there, but that reliance was built, able to go back, was built on the trust, which was built on those principles that she knew how I would respond in that situation.
Right, exactly. That's a perfect example.
Yeah. So now if you're with someone in that situation and things don't go as you think they would, is that time for you to start to begin to think about that and say, maybe this is not the person or maybe there's a different situation?
Possibly. I think it might be time to at least ask oneself some questions about it and reassess things. And then, you can either proceed and maybe see if there are further instances of that. Maybe just one instance of that happening may not be enough to make you decide that this relationship's no good. Maybe that person was having a bad day or dealing with something, of their own or whatever. But if you start seeing, several of those indications, then I think it's definitely time to step back and kind of reevaluate things.
I know that in some cases, we're taking everything based off of the snapshot mm-hmm. that we see in time. But is there sometimes when maybe we need to be aware of that one snapshot that we saw, but say, maybe we need to look at this just a little bit more deeply. As you said, a person could have been having a bad day, something just, the stresses of that week or that day just built up mm-hmm. and how they responded to that was not how you thought they were going to respond to it. But their response was based off of a lot of other factors that didn't just pertain to you.
Right, right. You know, I think it's a matter of discerning whether or not this inability to rely on this person is a, you know, situational thing, or is it more characterological, more, you know, longstanding, more just part of who they are, at least in this relationship.
Okay, here's the tough question for Valentine's Day. When it comes to being invested and committed in a relationship, who commits first, men or women?
I mean, first of all, I don't know if there's any definite, you know, data on that that gives any kind of definitive answer. I mean, my answer would be that it's probably a very individual thing. I mean, I don't know that there's any real consistent gender difference there. I mean, I think it's highly individual. Yeah.
One of the things that you all brought up in the class was the power of touch mm-hmm. in a relationship. How strong is the power of touch in a relationship?
It's extremely powerful. You know, and there's a lot of physiological, biological reasons for that. I mean, you know, our species wouldn't have survived if we didn't reproduce. You know, I mean, so there's a very, you know, strong genetic biological drive to find partners and, you know, and to form relationships with them. And it just, you know, it feels good. You know, I mean, people wouldn't engage in physical relationships if it didn't feel good, both emotionally and physically.
And that's part of that attraction, too, right?
Yes.
You want to just get closer until you're touching each other.
Absolutely, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And that's the one thing. It's kind of like when you meet that person for the first time, it's usually you give each other a hug, which is you're broaching the touch boundaries, but then you begin to, the good feelings, the oxytocin begins to flow into a person. But how important is it also to recognize that touch can quickly lead to other things and give you that sense of blind love?
Right. Yes, that's the danger of it. If one gets to that stage of physical contact too early, because it feels so good, you know, that can blind you to other things. So like those, you know, flaws, those red marbles that we were talking about earlier, you can be not aware of those because you're so, you know, enthralled with all these physical sensations and emotional sensations that you're having as a result of the touch. So that's, you know, why it's important to kind of leave that till later in the relationship, not to say that it can't start out that way and not work. I mean, it could, but chances are that it may not. I mean, it, you know, I think it's important to know one another first before it gets to that point.
How dangerous can blind love be, especially in the new beginnings of a relationship, because you've got the power of touch, you've got all these other things working. How dangerous can that be in that situation?
Well, I think it can be very hazardous. I mean, you know, especially if you have, you know, you were talking about baggage earlier. You know, if somebody comes into a relationship with a lot of unmet needs, you know, let's say, you know, for example, maybe they didn't get much attention as a child, and they're still craving that as an adult, and they meet someone, and the first person that comes along that gives them a lot of attention, they're going to be enthralled with. And then if it gets into that touch stage and you add to that, you know, all those, you know, pleasurable sensations, then, you know, you have somebody who's just kind of walking into it blindly. You know, that probably in most cases isn't going to end up very well.
And that can affect anyone in any age, right? It's not just something that happens to the young.
Right, right. Yes. Yeah, it can happen at any... I mean, I think the young are a little bit more vulnerable to it just because mm-hmm. they're not quite as knowledgeable of themselves and things in general. But yeah, it can happen at any stage, mm-hmm. as I well know.
Uh-oh. Well, you're probably not alone.
And I think we're right. There are many people today in there.
Right,
like probably most people have, if they're honest anyway.
Mm-hmm. How important is it to be compatible with that person that you're trying to start a relationship with? I know there's, in some cases, opposites attract. Mm-hmm. Those that may be similar. And then those that are on the extreme other end of that. How important is compatibility when starting out that new relationship with someone?
I think it becomes especially important as the relationship goes on. I mean, it's possible for two people who are exactly opposites to meet and like each other and date for a while. But if that's all there is, then it may not last very long. So I think it's important to be compatible. And both of those theories, if you will, hold true at certain points, the idea that opposites attract versus the idea that the more similar people are, the more likely they are to stay together. I mean, both of those ideas are true in different respects at different points in the relationship.
I know you all offer these classes as a community service, mm-hmm. but what a lot of people may not also know is that there is a financial incentive for people to compete the classes, and I know it's essentially the same as cash. Mm-hmm. There was for the How to Pick a Partner class, which is one of your core classes, there was $100 worth of gift cards given out. So for coming every week just for that 2 week time, you get there. I think there was Quick Trip, mm-hmm. there was Target, there was Walmart, there was different places where people always go to shop.
Mm-hmm.
But the gift cards become secondary because of all the information that you're learning in all the classes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, because this is a research project at MU, mm-hmm. They obviously need subjects. Mm-hmm. So we want to give them incentives to come to the classes so that they have an ample number of people upon which to draw their data. So yes, for the core classes, both the couples and the singles class, they get $100 total in incentives, which is usually broken up over two or three different disbursements during the class. And then for the supplemental classes, it's a total of $50 that they receive. And again, that's usually broken up into a couple of disbursements.
These are such great classes. If a person wanted to get more information, I know you all have a Cornerstones of Care in Hyde Park. Do you have a phone number for the Cornerstones of Care or one of the offices they could call to get more information about the classes and the programs?
Probably the best number to call, which would go directly to our Healthy Relationships program, is our toll-free number, which is 855-778-5437. And option number 3 on the recording.
And I know you have the Hyde Park location is located not too far from here, 300 East 36th Street. Mm-hmm. So if people wanted to stop in and make that appointment, they can also do that also, correct?
They can. I would hope that whoever they encounter there would know who to get them in touch with. I mean, I think most people would probably know how to do that.
And I know you also have a website where people can get more information on classes. It's showmehealthyrelationships.com.
Yes.
And it talks not only about the How to Pick a Partner class and the marriage class, but the other, I think there's a total of 7 classes that you all offer,
right,
that people can actually take.
Right.
And we'll briefly talk about that a little bit more next week when you come back. But there's financial management.
Mm-hmm.
There's strong family, strong children.
Mm-hmm.
Next week's topic, which we're going to be talking about the class, taking care of you.
Mm-hmm.
And then also there is one for those maybe needing job skills,
mm-hmm.
so that you offer a wide range of classes to help build people to live in a community.
Yes. Yes, that's correct.
So is there anything else that, as we start to close out, that you would like to say about the program or some of the classes that, I know no class is ever the same, because all 3 that I've taken with you all so far, each one has been different.
Right.
You see some of the same people in the same classes, but it's totally different from, it was totally different from the first class, which I think there was only 8 of us, to then the second class, there was 20,
right.
And in the third class, I think it was 10,
right.
But it, you learn so much in each different class, just sitting around, talking with different parents,
right.
Or different people who've been in a relationship, and it's basically just a, it's not more instructor-led, it's kind of a round table information. Once things start going, people start adding to, it's like building a puzzle.
Right.
Everybody starts adding a piece to it, and before you know it, you've got a huge puzzle built that was not just built from one person saying everything. It's built from the people around the community, that table, as you were saying, strong neighborhoods, strong communities at the same time.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I think that's exactly right. I have a class right now that I'm teaching. It's one of the Taking Care of You classes, and it's a small class. There's only, I think, 8 people in there, and all of them have been in classes with one another before. About half of the class have been together in previous classes, and the other half of the class have also been together in classes. So it kind of builds a support network. Some of those people I know have gotten to be friends even outside of the classes and support each other. So yeah, that's another important part of the program, I think.
So I would like to thank Dr. Post for being our guest today, but he's also going to be back next week, and we're going to talk about the Taking Care of You class, because as you build that relationship, as you begin to build, get to know that person, it's also important for you to take care of yourself in that situation so you don't get lost while you're building that relationship at the same time. So
I like that class.
They have some great classes that are really geared, as they said, to help build and strengthen our communities and things that we need to do. We're never in Cowtown Conversations without a community minute. We've got unexpectedly warm weather today, but we're going to be looking at having 2 to 5 inches worth of snow this weekend. So definitely take care and check on your neighbors and your residents. As we've been saying here, it takes a village to build a child. Takes a village to build a child, but we all must work together to begin to ensure that our children have the best foundation possible. So for Cowtown Conversations, this has been your host, Joseph Jackson, and my hostess, Marvita Oliver. Stay tuned for My Place with Larry J, and have a great day.